KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business. Filmmaker Sean Levy's new movie, Free Guy, a big-budget original starring Ryan Reynolds as a video game character, is flying into the teeth of the storm. After having had its release date pushed three times because of the pandemic, the film is finally opening exclusively in theaters. Heading into opening weekend, Levy wasn't sure. Are people going to go?
I have to confess, I don't know. I don't know what the comfort level will be. I don't know what the reaction will be to A, going to theaters, and B, going to theaters for a new movie. I'd like to believe there's an audience and an appetite for originality and non-franchise sequels, etc., but I don't know.
The producer and director behind hits including Night at the Museum and Netflix's Stranger Things tells us about the ups and downs of making Free Guy and why he still wants studios to greenlight big movies that aren't part of a franchise, even if he isn't sure there'll be enough theaters to show them in. But first, we banter. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my associate in banter, Matt Bellany. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So last week's show, we talked all about Scarlett Johansson and her fight against Disney for putting Black Widow on Disney Plus for $30 a pop, and then Disney coming back with this very inflammatory statement saying that Scarlett Johansson is insensitive to COVID. And I wrote a story and people were like, wow, this was a huge blunder PR-wise. You know, Bob Iger never would have gotten involved in a thing like this. I mean, Bob Iger would never get into a fight with talent publicly like that. And I think there were some people thinking, well, does Bob Chapek know what he's doing? Well, you know what? We just got the most recent Disney earnings. Right now, Bob Chapek's feeling pretty good, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the subscriber numbers for Disney Plus went up a lot, 116 million, which is big increases. No surprise that it's increasing given the exclusives that they are putting on Disney Plus. Luca, the Pixar movie, was a big driver. They also had Loki, the Marvel show. And obviously, they had Black Widow on there for a $30 upcharge. So it's working. This is what the Wall Street analysts and the investors all want. They want growth in the streaming services. And at a time when Netflix has been sort of stagnant, Disney is growing at a big clip and they are getting up there in terms of revenue they are generating from direct to consumer.
They have that mighty IP. And of course, the theme parks have returned to profitability because they are open again.
But it's interesting. The one thing that analysts aren't talking about, obviously, is box office. You know, usually you would suspect that a business struggling like the theatrical distribution business, that would be a topic on an earnings call, but people don't care anymore. It's all about the streaming numbers. So you look back at what happened in the Scarlett Johansson situation, and why did Disney act this way? And why are they being so adamant about this streaming strategy and talent is not the priority? This is why they're rewarded. And this is what the world cares about right now.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's that simple. I mean, I don't think that Kevin Feige, the head of Marvel, could possibly be happy with that kind of fight. It was clear that Bob Chapek had split Disney, where there's a business side that decides where the product goes, and then there are the people who make the product and have to deal with talent. It seems that none of those people in that latter camp were even consulted. So I do think there could be a ripple effect. You know, Disney is the enemy. Right now, Wall Street is enamored of Disney. They love growing the streaming service, but ultimately, over time, right now, Hollywood is fighting with Disney, and I don't see how that is a good thing.
No, I mean, long term, you're right. That is something that they're going to have to contend with, but there aren't that many places to go. I mean, I reported this past week that Peter Rice, who runs the television side at Disney, he was thinking about what he might do next, and he ended up re-signing at Disney because, you know, in part, there aren't a lot of options for those top-level executives that want access to those kinds of resources and that kind of IP, and Disney really has a lot to offer.
Yeah, I just think that right now you've got, look, maybe the agencies and they're representing their clients cannot win this battle, maybe. But SAG-AFTRA ended up weighing in, and I think that should be considered something alarming. You know, SAG-AFTRA saying, we don't like what you did with Scarlett Johansson. We don't like the tone of it. We don't like the way people are being paid. You know where that could lead, Matt.
Yeah, and ultimately it could be a guild issue that resolves this, where, you know, they draw a line in the sand and say, listen, if you're going to put these movies on streaming, you're going to pay talent what they believe they are entitled to. And that'll be a whole fight that we've discussed on this show before.
Yeah, that is a whole fight that will happen and is underway. Let me turn to for a moment to Jeopardy. Jeopardy. The final Jeopardy answer is Mike Richards got the job.
Who is Mike Richards is a better question. You did not yeah. You did not phrase that in the form of a question.
Who is Mike Richards, which is truly a question. Well, now he's become, at least in the media world, where very well known. He was the executive producer. He is now going to be the person trying to replace the iconic host of Jeopardy, Alex Trebek. And there was controversy that, you know, Variety reported that he was the likely contender to get the job. Nobody knew who he was. It came out very quickly that he had been named in a bunch of litigation involving alleged sex discrimination and harassment at previous shows he worked on. I kind of thought, well, they floated his name out there to see if people would notice, and they did. And these things happened more than 10 years ago, and Mike Richards, you know, said, I am not the guy described in that litigation, the set of these series of lawsuits. But nonetheless, I just felt like that's probably going to be it. But there was like a big sentimental favorite in LeVar Burton, and other people auditioned. And to the dismay of a bunch of those people who were hoping for one of those contenders, they just went ahead anyway and named Mike Richards.
Yeah, I mean, I think a couple things are going on here. First, the Jeopardy audience is older. It is more conservative. It is right down the middle. It is not the Twitter audience or even the media audience of people that had their favorites and expressed some outrage over this choice. This is the safe choice. It is a guy who is in his 40s and is, you know, potentially going to sit in this chair for decades in this job. You know, they have always said from the beginning that the game is the star. These hosts that came in with their big personalities and their followings, that was fun as a stunt. But I don't think that people like Anderson Cooper or Aaron Rodgers or LeVar Burton ultimately had much shot at this. It was going to be someone that can let the game shine and would not be the person that, you know, everyone said, tune into X and Jeopardy. It's Jeopardy hosted by X. So it's not that surprising to me. I think, you know, when it comes to these claims that have been made against them, that is a serious issue. And presumably Sony Television made its own investigation. Obviously, this is a crown jewel of the company. They generate millions and millions of dollars off of Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune each year. So it's a risk to put someone in that chair who has a legal issue in his background. But presumably they did their due diligence on this. And, you know, the outrage will die down once he's there.
Yeah, I mean, this is a hugely, hugely valuable asset and has been for decades. This thing is just a money machine. So I'm a little surprised, but you're right that maybe the less out there host is the one that they chose, the less known. However, there's also in my mind a thought of, are we just in the brazen it out era? And I'm thinking right now of Chris Cuomo, who's drawn a lot of controversy for his involvement with his brother's problems in the gubernatorial mansion in New York, for being a participant in that, for having had his brother on the show, then was forbidden to talk about his brother. A lot of outcry about that. And CNN is trying to do the same thing, it seems to me, which is to brazen it out. Sony tried to kind of, I don't know, put a little sugar on the thing for those who were unhappy with it by saying Maya Bialik is like also being named, but she's just primetime specials. And it feels a little bit like, yeah, sure, that fixes it. That does not fix it, but it may not, as you say, matter.
Yeah, I don't think anyone was buying that. I mean, Mike Richards got the job. Maya Bialik is hosting some specials.
Yeah, so we'll see whether anything happens with that. I would suspect the Jeopardy audience, some segment of it may be upset. That happened when Drew Carey took over The Price is Right, and then people got used to him. So we will see. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, a founding partner of Puck News and author of a newsletter called What I'm Hearing. The new movie Free Guy stars Ryan Reynolds as a guy named Guy. He's perpetually in good spirits as he goes about his routine working at a bank, even as that bank gets robbed at the same time every day.
Everybody down on the ground. Everybody except you.
Jodie Comer plays Millie, a mysterious newcomer to Guy's world. One glimpse of her inspires Guy to break out of his rut, a routine that he's been stuck in because, in fact, he's just a minor background character in a video game, going through the same motions every day. Free Guy comes from busy filmmaker Sean Levy, the director and producer behind family-friendly hits, including The Pink Panther and Night at the Museum. Through his company 21 Laps, Levy earned a Best Picture Oscar nomination for producing Arrival in 2016. The same year, he produced an original little Netflix show called Stranger Things. Free Guy is the first film Levy has directed since Stranger Things took off, and it all began so smoothly. Levy and Ryan Reynolds bonded instantly and were all set up at a movie studio you might remember called Fox. Cameras were ready to start rolling in late spring 2019.
And right before we started shooting, I can't remember how we heard about it, but it became clear that, oh, wait, our home studio just got swallowed up by a bigger studio. And I don't remember whether I had anxiety that our movie was going to be halted, because, in fact, what I do remember is several movies got halted and just kind of shut down in the aftermath of that purchase. But I do remember I had a meeting before shooting with the Allens at Disney.
And when you say the Allens, I'll just interject. You're talking about Alan Horn and Alan Bergman, who were running the film studio.
Yes. Yeah, they had read the script. And I have to say, to their credit, they had a lot going on. Thankfully, they really did respond to the script of Free Guy. And literally, I got one request from Alan Horn, which is to make the bittersweet ending of the movie also in some ways optimistic, and I assured him that I have no interest in purely bleak endings or anything for that matter. And I do like to embrace some strand of optimism and humanism.
Give us a little hope, Sean. Give us some hope.
Yeah, well, I'm trying. I've always tried, and I'm trying more than ever now. And what used to be my personal preference, frankly, now feels like important work in the face of such hopelessness.
So you're at Fox, you're getting bought. Alan Horn and Alan Bergman read this. I think you don't have to confirm this. I hear this is the one that they were really enthusiastic about and have put their energies behind.
I can confirm that. I can confirm that. That was true when we made it. It became even more true when they were at the test screenings with me and they experienced what the movie becomes with an audience. And they've stayed really bullish and enthusiastic and committed to it through this marketing process.
Which is something when you're talking about Disney, yeah.
Well, Disney and an original title, right? Which is, it's almost an anomaly in 2021 for any studio to release a big budget original movie.
Yes, it's almost kind of like depleting a resource not to try original content, but that seems to be where the studios are.
I'm in an interesting position because on the one hand, I really do understand that it feels less risky and therefore less scary to spend money on a project that has some foothold in cultural affection and familiarity, right? Sequels and IP and known franchises. But if that's all we make, there will be this real absence of surprise. And for me, that is the delight of movie going and movie watching, is the possibility of surprise. And I've been lucky in my career with the Night at the Museum franchise and Stranger Things. And, you know, I like making new stories. It is not only satisfying creatively, but when you can penetrate the culture and create something new where there was nothing before, that is deeply gratifying. And having experienced that gratification, I'm always chasing it and I'm always pursuing it. And it's why Free Guy is an original and new movie. And the film I made with Ryan immediately thereafter is also an original and new movie. And I remain committed to it.
So did you manage to shoot the parts you needed to shoot? I'm trying to figure out whether you cruised into the pandemic or that was not the problem.
No, we were done. We were done with Free Guy. We had wrapped, we had edited, we had in fact locked picture. Wow. And the only thing that was ongoing during the lockdown, so March, April, May of 2020, was the extra time allowed me to add some extra layers of visual flair with visual effects.
So you don't get the 4th of July, and I can't remember, it was rescheduled.
December 11th. I can't even believe I remember that date. All these false starts. We were July 4th, then we were December 11th. Thank God I am creative brothers at this point with Ryan Reynolds, who has a keen instinct for doing everything with a slight or substantial hint of self-deprecation. So even as we were announcing our new release dates, we were making fun of the possibility of reliable release dates, which in retrospect, I'm grateful for that tongue-in-cheek because we blew right through December of 2020 and here we find ourselves in the summer of 2021.
What was the feeling like? I'm obviously disappointing, but we were all in such a bizarre space. I just wonder what it feels like to have this big movie just, you know, unable to move
just
forward.
Sitting there. Yeah, you know? I suppose every artist, every filmmaker has some component that is just artist narcissist. And so I suppose there were moments where my frustration at not being able to share what we made, it bubbled up. But that was in the midst of such bigger frustrations, such bigger heartbreak as the pandemic was dragging on and worsening and morphing into different threats and different degrees of lockdown, that in the scheme of things, I was pretty focused on keeping everyone I cared about healthy and safe, and seeing so much insanity all around. The delay of a movie release date didn't seem like anywhere near, not even a top 1,000 worst thing going on. So that lent me quite a bit of patience.
Right now, we're in this, we thought we were out, but we're not out moment.
Well, and so it's interesting. I have been a studio popcorn filmmaker my whole career. And as such, I've grown up in this business with almost a reliance and occasionally an addiction to the numbers game. You know, predominantly that opening weekend number, that cumulative box office number. And for so long and for so many years of my career, that's like the metric of achievement. And yet, with the release of Free Guy, I have to confess, I don't know. I don't know what the comfort level will be. I don't know what the reaction will be to A, going to theaters, and B, going to theaters for a new movie. I'd like to believe there's an audience and an appetite for originality and non-franchise sequels, etc., but I don't know. So I'm going into the release of this movie, unlike all my prior ones, with a, I don't know if fatalistic is the right word, but I'm very much more looking to, is the movie having the effect on those who see it that we'd hoped? And on that metric, by that standard, to get the kind of reactions Free Guy's been getting, to get the kind of reviews that very recently I'm seeing Free Guy is getting, that's really, really satisfying. The box office is, it's always been beyond our control, but you forget that. Now, I never forget that. I literally don't know. So I'm looking to other measures to understand, well, did all that work pay off? And certainly as far as affecting and entertaining and touching the people who have seen it and will see it, it's starting to feel like we did our job. It did pay off. Because at the end of the day, what I cared about was Free Guy getting experienced on a big screen. And it's why I was grateful that in the midst of such long delays, there was never even a discussion of a sale to or a funneling of it to a streamer. This is a big screen movie. And it may be, I mean, who knows? There may be a very purely mercenary or contractual reason why Free Guy and Last Duel and Kingsman, and I think, you know, those are the main, Death on the Nile. Those, I think, are the last of the pre-merger Fox movies. And I believe they're all theatrical releases, but I can't claim fluency in the details of those deals.
But you know that it was never addressed with you.
I do know it was never addressed, and I do know there was never a conversation about streaming for Free Guy.
We just have had an interview with, you know, and Jason Blum has gone very public, you know, saying, I am a hypocrite because I took this Exorcist deal with NBC Universal for 3 Exorcist movies for a big fee. But he also has said he really supports Scarlett Johansson's fight with Disney because he believes that participating in the back end makes for better movies.
Well, here's what I would say. So I've been doing this job long enough to have worked in this business back when there was true, pure first dollar gross, where a director or a movie star and a few producers actually participated meaningfully and quite literally in every ticket sold. So that was the law of the land for many years. And certainly I made Pink Panther and Night at the Museum and Date Night in that era. And it is indeed a true incentive, and it does give creatives a real sense of ownership and a commitment to kind of the collective endeavor to make something that's great and entertaining enough to then make everyone more money. And by the way, I completely understand and empathize with the Scarlett Johansson situation. What I will also say, though, is there are certain streamers and certain deals, and I've done them myself, where it's acknowledged going in that it's not going to be a box office revenue-driven participation structure. And you get effectively prepaid for, I think I've heard the expression that you get paid for a triple, right? That you get paid as if the movie wasn't a global blockbuster, but was pretty damn successful. Now, here's the truth. Most movies aren't. Most movies are singles, maybe doubles. So I do think that if there is a structure that prepays a presumed or implied back end on a scale of a solid triple, that there is a way as an actor or a filmmaker to feel fairly compensated, even if you're not compensated on the backside of it with every ticket sold.
But it's not quite the same.
Nothing is quite the same as true gross. Nothing.
Coming up after a short break, love is in the air as Sean Levy describes his instant bromance with Ryan Reynolds. Can you blame him? You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes. Join Jacqueline Coley as she hosts a brand new podcast, Scene on Screen. Meet the innovative people at NBC Universal as they share their journeys, inspirations, and the movies that define them. Each episode is an intimate and fun conversation about the impact of film. Scene on Screen is available now, wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're talking to producer and director Sean Levy about his new film, Free Guy, starring Ryan Reynolds. Free Guy is now in theaters, and only in theaters, one of the few films this year to get a true exclusive theatrical release. Free Guy is the first collaboration between Levy and Ryan Reynolds, who's also a producer on the film. They have another movie called The Atom Project coming out next year on Netflix.
Literally, I just saw something on Twitter where it was a picture of Ryan and I at the premiere of Free Guy, and someone wrote, "Find someone who looks at you the way Ryan Reynolds looks at Sean Levy."
And vice versa, right?
Oh my God, vice versa. He's real easy on the eyes. But I'm not looking at him with adoration because of his handsomeness. We have a mutual friend in Hugh Jackman, and Hugh had told us both for years before we met, that if Ryan and I ever met and worked together, that it would be like instant bromance. And if we made one movie together, we'd make 15. And I hate to say it, but Hugh Jackman might be some kind of Aussie prophet, because from the day that Ryan and I started collaborating, it was symbiotic and in sync and pretty effortless. And it wasn't just that our ideas and our kind of shared aspiration for movies that are both comedic and warm-hearted, that there's overlap there, but he's also Canadian. He's also a father of daughters. He's also a guy who is going to bust tail on his job, but he also wants to get it done, wrap, get home to have dinner and bath time with his kids. And that's the way I've always approached my job, and Ryan is built quite similarly.
And you both have a certain sensibility. I think he said you're both sentimental.
I'm very clearly sentimental. And my sentimentality has always been on naked display in every movie I've made. Ryan, because he's so famous for Deadpool, and Deadpool is so defined by a certain snarky, cynical, self-aware form of comedy, it's easy to overlook the gooey center in Ryan Reynolds. He is a deeply emotional guy who has a thick armor of sarcasm and arch wit, but I found his sentiment so available, and it's on display in Free Guy. It's even, frankly, it's even more on display in the movie we're editing right now that we just wrapped, called The Adam Project. We want to make movies that are filled with feeling.
I will note that The Adam Project was Paramount, but Skydance had moved it to Netflix, which is your other home where you have a major deal.
Yeah, The Adam Project was developed for years by Skydance at Paramount, and then there was a deal made, and by the time we shot the movie, it was a Netflix movie, and yes, indeed, that's where it will be distributed in 2022.
And both of you felt kind of agnostic regarding the platform?
I think that Ryan got to comfort with that agnosticism quicker than I. And there were moments, I confess, where I'm, because it's a big time travel adventure. So there's a lot of emotion, but there's a healthy dose of visual spectacle. And there were times where I'm lining up shots that are big and epic and cinematic. And the thought would kind of flitter through my mind that, oh, wait, is this going to be watched on a cell phone? And then I really love working at Netflix. But there were moments where I had pangs of, ooh, that's right. It's a different world and it's going to be experienced in a different way. And so, yes, I did this very kind of large scale, new and overarching deal at Netflix for 21 Laps, which is my company. But one of the core tenets of that deal is that I'm still very much free to make movies everywhere and in any form.
I mean, I don't even know how possible will it be. We don't even know who's in this. I mean, obviously the studios are now saying we are going to defend a theatrical window, but will there be green lights, I guess?
There will be green lights for lower budget movies, you know, small awards fair, independence, festival fodder. But will there be green lights for original, big budget, blockbuster scaled filmmaking that is new? That is the world I've lived in for the majority of my career. And it's the world I love. It's the kind of filmmaking I love. That's the uncertainty. Literally, there's a whole run that I wrote and then had improvisation on top of by Taika Waititi. Ironically, Taika Waititi, the director of Thor Ragnarok, who comes in Free Guy and plays the video game kind of honcho. So he's kind of our surrogate studio head. And he literally has a scene where he reacts with absolute befuddlement and laughter at the concept of making a new something.
Make an original? Why would I do that when I can make a sequel?
Sequel.
So we could make it better?
IPs and sequels. That is the thing that people want. Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
You love Kentucky Fried Chicken, right?
Mm-hmm. No.
If you love Kentucky Fried Chicken, and I made Kentucky Fried Chicken, and I know that you love Kentucky Fried Chicken, why would I make another restaurant called, I don't know, Albuquerque Boiled Turkey? Okay? Mm-hmm, makes mm-hmm. no sense, homie.
No sense.
What am I going to give you? A sequel. Kentucky Fried Chicken Chicken, part two.
And so it's our way of, within an original film, to comment on the rarity of green lights for original big-budget films.
And will there be theaters to show them in?
Well, Kim, from your lips to the industry's ears and the exhibition industry's ears and the culture's ears, because it was already an uncertainty and it was already disconcerting watching some of the trends. You add a pandemic into that mix and you have truly an angst-ridden, angst-generating level of uncertainty that time will tell.
Producer and filmmaker Sean Levy is the director of Free Guy. Thank you, Sean.
Thanks, Kim.
And that's The Business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's program with help this week from Desmond Taylor and John Meek. Ray Guarna mixed the show. You can stream The Business as well as other great KCRW podcasts on the KCRW app. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.